You're listening to Humanitarian Radio with your hosts, Tony St. Tone and Janie Beauclair.
Good afternoon and welcome to this edition of Humanitarian Radio. I am Janie Beauclair.
And I'm Tony St. Tone.
It's a great day in the neighborhood. There's a lot of really cool stuff coming on in the next couple weeks, and we're really excited to let you know what's happening in the area. Also, we have a really cool guest on our show today.
Yeah, tonight we have Adam Socker. It's someone that we met at a presentation that was given by
Ruth Kramer
and Miracle Mike, who is two of our past guests, and it seemed like we met a lot of people at that event. So,
well, a lot of like-minded people, and we're definitely always searching for people who think positive, do great things in the world, and are making a difference. And Andy is definitely another one of those fabulous people. He's so in his own place that he's creating a museum for the rest of us to be able to see some history never tapped into.
Yeah, and if you want to meet people similar to Miracle Mike, Ruth Kramer, and Andy, you might be interested in coming down to one of the events that we have going on February 15th.
Yeah, let's talk about some of these things coming up.
So February 15th, Miracle Mike and Ruth Kramer are putting on another event.
Here in Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles, so if you have to be in L.A., I think, to attend. Janie and I are going to be performing acoustically, but it's really a really great event. Ruth will be
doing some spiritual healing.
Healing and readings for everyone in the audience, and it's really a powerful, powerful presentation, because what happens is, as she's speaking to one person, the answer will resonate with everyone else in the room. And everyone seems to come together, too, in a collective way.
It's kind of like Long Island Medium on steroids, because it's not so commercial, not so reality show. It's like real life.
It's real. It's very real, but very entertaining and very fun.
Extremely, yeah.
Ruth gives a great presentation and keeps it very lighthearted. Even in serious situations, she has everyone laughing throughout the entire presentation. So it's definitely a lot of
and
fun.
And Mike is a great, great, great host as well. And, you know, he's just an extraordinary person as well. If you didn't catch his radio show, check him out on the Humanitarian Radio pages. Also, I want to mention, what is happening tonight?
Tonight, it's the Grammys.
One of your favorite times of the year, Tony St. Tone, performer.
Yes, very excited about the Grammys tonight, just to check out to see what is going on in music. It's interesting every year to see how it's evolved throughout the years. I got to be honest with you, sometimes I watch it and I go, is this actual music? Because I feel like it's just not as close to what I remember it being. But you know what? It's constantly pushing those boundaries. So that's why I'm always interested to see what are people listening to. Because obviously someone has to be buying this stuff to be nominated on the Grammys.
Well, and you were reading something earlier about if you perform on the Grammy stage this year in a certain category or for a certain category, that you can't be nominated for a category next year.
No, what they meant was the Best New Artist. You can't be nominated for a song last year and then be nominated for Best New Artist this year. What they're doing is they're changing rules, which I think is great, because when they first came out with the best heavy metal band, Metallica was up against Jethro Tull, and Jethro Tull won. And everyone's like, what? I didn't even know Jethro Tull put an album out. So obviously,
some people are wondering who you're talking about.
They know who Jethro Tull is.
And Metallica.
Aqualung and
you
Metallica.
Metal boy from the 80s.
Yeah, they know who Metallica is. Google it.
So I want to just bring up one last thing before we go to commercial and bring in Andy. And that is, we are having our very first Humanitarian Radio Humanitarian of the Year Award.
Yes.
And we are presenting that at the Ascent Expo.
Yeah, the Ascent Expo is something very cool that we are getting involved in also. It's happening February 27th, 28th, and March 1st.
At the Los Angeles Convention Center.
Mm-hmm. And one of the presenters, or one of the speakers actually, is Reverend Michael Beckwith, along with Patch Adams. You remember him. Robin Williams played this doctor that uses humor to help heal people. And a lot of other motivational speakers, entertainers. And what they're doing basically is they're taking a lot of these conscious businesses and conscious people that are making changes in the world and bringing them all together in one place for the very first expo. I'm very excited to be part of it. Easy Way Broadcasting is going to be there, And he's
and the band Saint Tone is going to play, and Humanitarian Radio is going to do a presentation to our first recipient of the Humanitarian of the Year Award. And I got to tell you, we are so excited to be giving this award to this particular person, but you're going to have to stay tuned to the station and look on our Humanitarian Radio Facebook to get clues of who the winner is.
Yeah, and I got to say also that we have met a lot of people throughout the years who are very deserving of this award, but we wanted to start off with one award for this year, and who knows,
really
next year
special.
We might break it into several categories, but it's been a great journey the past 2 years just doing this type of work.
And let's say also that if you want to nominate someone, drop it on our Facebook. That's the best place to communicate with us. And if you're not sure who to nominate but you want to join in, go to humanitarianradio.com and read all the past shows. Listen to all the past shows there, and you can pick a guest right from there to nominate for the next Humanitarian Radio of the Year Award.
Okay, coming up, Andy Soccer, right after this commercial break. Stay tuned.
I'm living here in a state of abundance. I'm counting blessings that I never saw before. Cause I'm the ruler of this kingdom I call me.
Positive affirmations wrapped in pop rock songs.
Give me that best case scenario.
It's motivational musician Saint Tone. Check out his latest live show, The Rise Up Experience, at www.sainttone.com.
Mama said we can always hug it out.
Pick up his latest CD, Outside the Box, available on iTunes. For music with a positive message, check out sainttone.com.
Do you have a great idea for a product and you don't know how to get it made? Call Artistic Journey. They'll help you find your way to getting your new products made and into the marketplace. Need a free consultation? No problem. Need artwork and graphics? No problem. Need your idea turned into something wonderful that the whole world can use? Call Janie at Artistic Journey to help you get through this process. It's not as hard as you think. With 20 years of experience, Artistic Journey can pave the way for your product to get into the hands of people around the world. Call Artistic Journey today, 941-780-2538.
So we are back with Andy Soccer, the founder of The Lavender Effect. Hey, Andy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me today.
You know, Janie and I were just talking about that we've been able to meet some really, really cool people lately, and you were actually at the same party with a friend of ours, Ruth Kramer, who was a guest, and Mystery Mike, who has been a guest also on our radio show, and actually, come to think of it, there was another woman, Amy Linden, who was from that party that we actually interviewed too. So that night that we got to meet all you guys was really magical, and there's so many people with so many stories that we wanted to share with our listeners, and you are definitely one that stood out. The Lavender Effect, you're the founder of it. Tell us a little bit about it, of how you got started and what it's all about.
Well, in 2008, there was a proposition that was put to vote where our community, our California community, decided to take away lesbian, gay, bisexual people's right to marry. And interestingly enough, this, and I'm going to be using the term LGBT, which is lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. We want to be all inclusive about our community. So this ballot, this measure came on, and it took our ability away to marry, just a basic civil right. This woke up a whole generation, especially a young generation that had never really battled for their rights before, and I wanted to do something that it was obvious that in so many ways we can easily take a project that told our history. You know, there's this rich history, the journey of the LGBT community, you know, in terms of our rights and our recognition and our visibility and our freedoms and so forth. And a lot of that story, as I researched this, I realized that a lot of that story is really, really based here in Southern California. It's a global story, but there were some major milestones in our history here. So I joined up with a very talented group of millennials that formed an organization called Roots of Equality, and we put together a small exhibit called Lavender Los Angeles, and this was the untold story of Southern California's rich LGBT heritage and kind of the formation of the movement here from World War II forward.
Wow, okay. That sounds awesome. And now, you know, I know that you and I were talking about this when I first met you, that there's not a lot of celebrated history out there. And I think that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to gather all this untold history that there have been many gays and lesbians throughout history that have really contributed so much to this country and to the world, I mean, around the world. And yet, at the time of their life, they just couldn't be openly gay. And so they had to hide a lot of that. And it's like, yet they were incredible minds, incredible talents, and yet they had to hide a part of themselves. And you're here to celebrate that and say, hey, listen, these guys contributed so much.
Oh, it's so true. And you know, as the team back in 2008, 2009, you know, research this rich history, we you know, I became not only an advocate but an activist for the first time in my life. I realized that these stories are so profoundly impactful. You know, the fact that we've been invisible for so many years, you know, thousands of years in some cases, we could not express our love for one another. We could not openly talk about our sexuality. There's so much misunderstanding around human sexuality, and the LGBT or the gay community has been kind of the used as a symbol for this misunderstanding. And so at the core of our mission, which is to advance the future of LGBTQ heritage and culture, at the core of that mission is to demystify our nature and celebrate the fact that we've not only been a part of society, but we've been a majorly contributing part of society forever.
Right, right, and exactly. And I think you know, I think what happens with people, people in general, people fear what they don't know, and when they don't know it, they're fearful of it, and so they just push it away or don't confront it. They just avoid it or, you know, push it away, and it's fearful acts because they're afraid. But what are they afraid of? They're afraid of things that they don't know, that they don't fully understand.
You know? It's true, and we learned during Prop 8 that if you know that your neighbor is gay, or if you know that a family member is queer, then you're much more likely to say, well, of course they should be able to marry. You know, that seems like a no-brainer. But for the people that didn't know us, that don't know us, and those people still, you know, are in great numbers. So, you know, from this small exhibit in 2009, which saw thousands of people and we had a lot of great feedback, it became clear that we need to make a permanent project. We need to work towards if we can raise the funds, or I should say when we raise the funds, build
there you go.
a state-of-the-art museum that celebrates our contributions. So, but as any new nonprofit has to experience, we have to grow incrementally. And the project that we focused on to date is this video history project, or what's commonly referred to as an oral history project. And that's been really successful. We have interviewed several pioneers of the LGBT community. You know, many of these people are in the golden years of their lives, and we want to make sure that we capture their stories as soon as we can, because these stories have not been properly told. And this is a big turning point. When you step back and look at world history, the progress that we have made over the last 50 years is extraordinary.
Yes.
The fact that we have so much visibility, you know, this has been kind of a series of milestones that are connected. You know, the feminist movement, the civil rights movement, all of these major things have contributed and been a part of the LGBT movement, but ours is unique because we are in every part of society. We're every race, we're in every country, and we've played an important role. There's some American Indian tribes that call us the Two-Spirits, or the Two-Spirited people, and they acknowledge that there are gifts that we bring to society that are maybe not procreation based, but it's an honor that we participate in society. And in many cases, gay people were the shaman, the medicine women, and so forth, the seers of the future. And so there have been cultures, you know, ancient Greek culture and so forth, that have acknowledged human sexuality and this wonderful diversity. You know, the lavender effect. Lavender stands for this intersection between traditional genders. When you look at our logo, it is a ripple effect as to, you know, how that one person's action can create change for a much larger group. That's one part of it. The other part of it is that unique intersection between traditional genders, represented by baby blue and pink, which interestingly enough, are create lavender.
You know, I'm looking at your logo right now, and that symbol is incredible. It's great, great graphic, especially coming from, I'm a graphic designer, and I'm looking at it, and the way that it is, two separate ripples going out, and then there's that cross section where they do overlap. So you have, like you said, your baby blue for boys, and your pink for girls, and then you have your lavender in between, and what a uniqueness right there that you have. It's a combination. And to embrace the diversity of human life. I mean, and I went to a museum in New York. I can't remember the exact name of it, but they were talking about human sexuality and how there's gays within the animal life also. You know, it's natural. It's not something like, oh, well, you made that choice and stuff. No, it's something that just happens, and it's part of the diversity of human life. It's is what it is. It's like saying, I love butterflies, but I don't really like those ants. It's like, well, ants are part of the insect family, just like we're all part of this natural, what's the word I'm trying to say? This natural creation.
Continuum. I mean, Kinsey, the famous researcher, discovered through a series of interviews that human sexuality falls on this bell curve. And you know, there's been a lot of other researchers that have done similar work. For whatever reason, we tend to polarize human sexuality. You know, you might hear the term heteronormative. You know, that basically implies the polarization of human sexuality into straight or non-straight, or straight in what we're calling queer today. But there's this glorious intersection where you know, so much creativity exists at that intersection, and you know, at the core of it is, like you say, a very basic misunderstanding.
Yeah, totally. And again, I remember someone saying, you know, where would we be without the gays for this creativity or this aspect or this thought or this, you know, just like saying, where would we be without the musicians in the world? There would be no music. And where would we be without the dreamers out there? Well, there would be nothing to dream about and strive for. And where would we be without the artists who take the time to create paintings for us to enjoy? Or, you know, it's that same thing. It's like everyone contributes something to the whole, and gays have contributed for eons, since the dawn of time. And it's so interesting how certain societies have just put it aside and gone, well, yes, they have, but we don't want to talk about them. Just let them just be quiet about what they do. We'll take all of their talents. We'll take everything that they have to offer, but we don't want to talk about who they truly are. And it's like, but who they truly are is what brings out that creativity, that brings out those certain aspects of who they are, how they can see maybe possibly both sides of a story, you know, or how they can feel one way or another way. It's like they're bringing in this new vision or a different
perspective on
a thought or on a project. So I totally.
It's true. There's the two-spirited concept was really an idea about empathy. The fact that a man or someone that was born as a male could empathize with females, or a female born woman can empathize with masculinity in ways that cross those boundaries. You know, in a way, I think that society can learn a great amount from gay people regarding empathy and this ability to relate. I think artists, musicians of all genders and sexual orientations have this gift of empathy. And so I'm seeing that our story can actually help society advance itself, that knowing and understanding our oppression and our fight for equality and some of the things that we don't want to forget. You know, just like the Jewish people do not want to forget the Holocaust, we don't want to forget the difficult times that we encountered. That doesn't mean we stay in those times.
Right.
You know, the Lavender Effect's mission is to connect the dots between the past, the present, and our projected future together.
I think that giving people the understanding of the past and having them really open their eyes to the fact that there is a past where most people don't even realize how many gay people that they knew, idolized, worshipped, they don't even realize that those people were gay and they had no problem loving them before they knew that. I think that what you're doing, you open people's eyes to, there's a big past here, you guys. You kept your eyes closed all these years, but the reality is there is a past. There is a history. This is not something brand new. It's just time you open your eyes and realize that there is a past associated with this that is working into our present and our future. And it's time you jump on board and admit to yourself that it's okay. And I think it's really strong what you're doing, because you're forcing people to look at themselves and realize the hypocrisy that they've been emitting for the gay community.
Yeah, exactly. In many ways, it's a conversation about gender and oppression. I speak to a lot of people, and some of those people believe that gay men and women are kind of in the same category. You know, this is coming from the patriarchy, mm-hmm. and you know, in a way, I think we, the queer people, can learn so much from the story of the now and the new organization of women and all the things that took place in the feminist. One of our advisors, her name is Ivy Bottini, was at the heart of that movement, and she was rejected because she was a lesbian.
Right.
So there, you know, our time, we have come such a long way in the United States, and that's why this story is so profoundly impactful. That there were people like Troy Perry, mm-hmm. who came from a Baptist community and was tormented by his homosexuality, but came out of that depression realizing that, oh, the idea of God and gay are not mutually exclusive concepts. So he formed the Metropolitan Community Church. And that had a lavender effect or a ripple effect on many other religious organizations.
Think about the difference between Billie Jean King coming out as a lesbian tennis player 30 years ago, and now you have Ellen DeGeneres in her own show featured as a married woman, married to another woman. And look at the difference that 30 years has made, and what, by Ellen doing what she's doing by broadcasting herself, what a difference it's made just by pushing it into people's face and going, look, this is the way it is. Just open your eyes and accept it. I mean, it's a big stretch from Billie Jean King 30 years ago and the wrath she went through just because of who she loved.
I think that's a really good example. And in fact, we just interviewed Betty DeGeneres, Ellen's mother, who tells the story of her daughter coming out to the family, to her and to the family. The family had to stay in the closet. It wasn't just Ellen that was staying in the closet. It was the family that was staying in the closet for so many years. And then on the her sitcom, it was called The Puppy Episode, and she's so, in such a clever way, presented to the world that she was gay over a microphone in an airport.
And,
times have changed drastically. And in many ways, Hollywood has played an absolutely integral part of that change. Harvey Milk, many people know Harvey Milk. He had a huge impact for, 10 years. The Stonewall bar and raid, that's become a symbol of the LGBT movement. But so much has happened out of Hollywood to, incrementally build towards our freedoms.
Well, I want to say too, though, Andy, Hollywood was also responsible for keeping it in the closet for so long as well.
Right, exactly. I was just going to say that wasn't always the case. Rock Hudson,
right,
had what was called a lavender marriage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that lavender marriage was basically the same way of saying a gay marriage or a queer marriage.
Right.
And there's a brilliant documentary called The Celluloid Closet that really tells that story very well.
And what I want to say is, are you looking to when you, as you put this museum together, are you looking to, how far back are you thinking of going? Like, are you thinking of going back 100 years? Or are you thinking of keeping it current? Just out of curiosity, I know you and I had spoke at the party about different musicians. If it's Rob Hoffert from Judas Priest, or if it's Freddie Mercury or Elton John.
Liberace,
George Michael. I mean, there's Boy George. There's a lot of really incredibly talented musicians out there that are openly gay, and people still obviously love their music and what they're about. So I was just curious to see how far back you're thinking of going, if you're trying to say, hey, within the past 100 years or further back.
You know, that is to be determined. We've learned a little bit about connecting the dots between the past and current generations. We want to make sure that young people, as well as the general public, can connect to these stories. So I guess the answer to your question is that we're going to have to really investigate that and see where the opportunities are. You know, we could go back to the Renaissance. We could go back to the world history tells a very, very important story. Southern California is our main focus, and a lot of people came to Southern California to either work in the entertainment industry or work during the war times. So when we put together the Lavender Los Angeles exhibit, we actually started, we talked briefly about in the 20s and 30s, but we really got to the core of the conversation post-World War II. And I think that was a key time in Los Angeles history for us to begin with that really tells a fantastic story. But we could focus on the 60s and 70s. Those were very important times in terms of love and liberation and a sense of self.
I'm assuming that it would be really helpful for you guys if people in Hollywood or around the world that listen to this radio show were to get you information or photos or, you know, whatever they have of the past, the older time frame. That's probably a little bit harder to get that information unless you're a family member of someone and experience something through your family or your grandparents or whatever. I would think it would be really helpful to have people send you information about, 30, 40 years ago, circumstances yes. that were around them.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're actually very interested in telling those stories, not just videotaping people that are around, but collecting those stories in the various forms, personal photographs, letters, and so forth. Working with the local archives to tell these stories. And if anybody does want to send us information or some background or want to get involved, volunteer, they can send that to info@thelavendereffect.org. Or go to our website, which is www.thelavendereffect.org, and get on our mailing list, which gives people a whole series of options to get involved.
How far complete would you say you are in your project?
We're just at the beginning.
Okay.
I don't think this project is ever going to end,
to be honest. I was going to say that too. I was going to say, I would imagine this is a project that's going to never have a completion.
Yeah, because in so many ways, I hear these horror stories. We all hear these horror stories from Russia. Parts of Africa, the Asian countries. There's so much wisdom that we can communicate to these other places. At the same time, there are other countries that in many ways are a little bit more progressive than us. I was I was in Amsterdam a couple years ago at the International LGBT Conference on History, which includes mm-hmm. archives, libraries, museums, special collections, and so forth. And they have a beautiful collection there of regional LGBT history. So we want to help connect the dots between all these archives that exist all over the world, including the archives here in Southern California, the One Archives, the Mazer Lesbian Archives, the UCLA Legacy Project. There's so many great resources, and yet there are so many stories that have not been told.
And we
want to make sure that we're not just telling the story of our movement, but we want to tell the story of individuals that are, you know, fighting the fight in their own way in the Midwest of the United States. We don't always have to go to another country to see torment.
You know, I remember a story that I heard. I had gone and done an acting audition, and I was sitting for 8 hours, you know, how that goes. And I was sitting next to this girl who was talking to another girl next to her and had said, "My grandparents are from Iowa." Well, and then she goes, "Well, my two grandmothers got married in the 30s. And can you imagine two women trying to get married in Iowa in the 30s? And so she was telling the story about how it was hidden from the family for so many years, and then how it got to be that, you know, children were birthed, and that the whole story of how to get one of them pregnant when there wasn't artificial insemination and things of that nature then, and what a struggle it was. And that's why I was saying before, boy, I bet some of those stories that you would get from 30 to 60 years ago, when things were so much harder to conceal and so much harder to live your life as a gay person, I would imagine there would be some really tough stories to listen to of the lives that people endured at that time frame.
Absolutely. And we want to make sure that we're not just telling the stories of you know, our magnificent superstars, leaders of the movement.
Right.
Because everybody does their part in this grand scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to tell that story. That's a beautiful, you know, not only is it a story of love, but it's perseverance and really iconic of the average person experience. You know, the average person during that period, you know, this idea of coming out, one of the things that has risen to the surface in these oral history interviews that we're producing is the idea of coming out. That's a fairly new concept.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Most people never even considered in their wildest dreams that they could come out and still live a happy, normal life.
And
that was just the context of the time. When I go and I teach young people this LA's LGBT history, I have a hour lecture. I call it LA's LGBT History 101. And, you know, a lot of the teenagers can't really understand the context of the time. So one of our focuses at the Lavender Effect is to describe, to illustrate, to paint what it was like during those periods of time where we're losing the context.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one thing to say, you know, Ellen came out on a television show, but when you say that to a young person that doesn't understand
what came out means,
That is the heart and soul of good storytelling, and that's you know why we have a lot of people from the entertainment industry that are helping us out, because they can tell that story really well.
And think about this, the ending to the story that young lady was telling. She was about 21, and this was her great-grandmother's. She finished off her story. The other girl said to her, how does that make you feel, knowing that you're relatives were lesbians way back then. And she said, she looked at the other girl and she goes, all my friends are gay. And I thought, well, touche, little girl, good for you in having, you know, no care whatsoever about the
stereotype.
The relationship of someone. She's like, I don't care. I love everybody. You know, I just thought that was the perfect little put the other one in her place answer. Yeah. And what she said is, she said, my family have been great role models to the equality of all people. And I thought, you are brilliant, young lady. I'm so happy that there are young people like you out there that actually do think this way and aren't afraid to share, you know, their family's history to educate other young people as to, you know, it's okay. It's okay to have gay friends.
Right. Well, I guess one thing I was going to say real quick to add to that is, you know, this is a girl that had a great grandmother who
right.
went through that, not just a grandmother. So this story has been passed down
for generations.
To put aside, like, don't say anything to anyone, bury that thing in the closet. I mean, this is like going two generations back,
three.
And it's still being brought forward as a celebration of, like, no, we're very proud of that. I think that's awesome.
She said she wouldn't have been there.
I was just going to say that you just perfectly described what our mission is. It's to pass that baton of history, that baton of heritage to future generations. And we plan on doing this in a variety of ways, through our video testimonies, through interactive media, through eventually this state-of-the-art museum. So we've discovered that there are many opportunities to pass that forward, and that's why we've become a heritage organization that happens to be focused on LGBT heritage.
Right, right. And you know, I think as you start to hear more of these stories, again, even from common everyday people as opposed to just the celebrities like you said earlier, it becomes more real, and it's not like Ellen coming out on a TV show. It's the young girl in high school coming out to her parents saying, hey, this is who I am, and having the courage to say that and not feel like they have to move out of the country, move out of the state just to be who they really want to be. And let's face it, there's places in America still where you can't openly be gay, even though it's on TV and it's fabulous here. There's certain places that it's not so cool because they're still in a certain mindset where they're just not there yet. You know, like the East Coast and West Coast seems to be more accepting, more so than the middle America, I would say.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's a really great illustration. You know, the people may have come out or may be more prone to coming out because they see someone like Ellen coming out on television. But that's not always the case. You know, in many cases, they come to this themselves. When I came out to my father, when I finally had the opportunity to come out to my father, he said two things to me that changed my life. The first was that he would love me no matter who I love. And the second was that homosexuality is grossly misunderstood by society, and that I'm going to have a tough road ahead of me. And you know, that insight and that unconditional love have propelled me to do this work today and will continue to propel me in the future. I think if the Lavender Effect can communicate that unconditional love, that no matter where you are, no matter who you are, your situation with your family, your church, whatever it might be, if you love yourself first and foremost and accept that what you are is not only natural, but it is intended, if you believe in a higher power, that everything else will fall into place. And it's happening more and more. We're at this turning point in world history that will never be repeated. This is, if we're smart, it'll never be repeated. You know, the old saying, if you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And unfortunately, we have learned history's lessons over and over again because it's like, I will let another 100 years go by and we're back in that same situation again. So it's like it's keeping that insight going, hey, you know what? Let's not fall back into that again. Let's learn from that. Let's learn from other people's mistakes. And I truly believe that, you know, where we're at right now, I feel like people are becoming more tolerant of other people, like the, and not even tolerant, accepting. I shouldn't say tolerant, accepting of what everyone is. It's like, look, they have their beliefs. I have my beliefs. They have their way of living. I have my way of living. And with the internet and the way the world is, I think we're able to really get to see that we're not alone, even though we think we are, you know. I was watching this YouTube. I clicked on a YouTube channel last night, and it had two newscasters, and I can't think of their name right now, which is unfortunate, but it's not important to the story. And it was 21 years ago, roughly, something like that. And they're talking about, what is this thing, info at CBS.com? What's that mean? What is, like, is his people, are they going to write letters to us? What is that symbol? And they're like, is that at or is that about? What does that symbol mean? And they're trying to figure it out because it was like the internet. And it's like, we didn't understand it back then. And now we're all connected and we're all getting it. So my point of the story is hopefully we're at a point where it's like, you know, 10, 20 years from now, it's like, yeah. And we already are at this point where it's like, yeah, he's openly gay and they're openly gay. And yeah, they actually have a TV show. They have a talk show and it's okay. It's not this, you can't put them on TV or you can't openly say that. I was watching on your website. There was a woman who was one of the first ones elected either to Congress or something. I can't remember.
Sheila Kuehl.
Yes.
Sheila Kuehl. Yeah. She's a mover and shaker. And she was the first lesbian in Sacramento. Now she's our supervisor for District 13 here in Los Angeles County. She's absolutely amazing. And you can see her segment on the LavenderEffect.org under projects.
Right.
The Oral History Project, and we're trying to send as many as people as we can to that. We have 10 people currently on that list, and it's growing rapidly. Wells Fargo gave us a seed grant, and we're very honored to get some financial support. But you know, these interviews, we are using the platinum standards developed by Steven Spielberg. I had the fortune to work with him in the mid-90s in another division called GameWorks. That his vision was that gaming culture was going to change society, and it has.
Yeah.
And at the time, they were developing the Showa Institute, which captured 52,000 interviews from Holocaust survivors from all over the world. I'm using that model for our LGBT history project, and as we grow in support, we'll be able to capture these not only in Southern California but all over the world.
Wow, that's amazing. And you know, when people can sit back and start looking at all these stories, I know that it'll definitely impact their lives as far as being able to come out to be who they truly are and not have to hide anymore. And I think ultimately the goal, I would think, in all of this is for everyone to just be openly who they are as opposed to who they aren't. I have a song that I just actually put out today that I had written a couple of months ago, and I just put it on my Facebook today, and it's called Why Live a Lie? And it talks about... I'm just realizing this. It talks about if you're uncomfortable in your relationship or your job or whatever, it's time to step up and make a change. So why are you living a lie? And it could obviously easily apply to, you know, if you're living in the closet, it's like it's time to come out and be who you truly are. It's time to just have that courage.
And it does take a tremendous amount of courage, especially in those earlier days. I interviewed a wonderful transgender woman. Her name is Mia Yamamoto, and she was born Michael Yamamoto, and she was in a relocation camp, and excuse me. She is a wonderful attorney, and she helps, she's a defense attorney and helps many, many people. She transitioned from a man to a woman in her 60s, and she was pretty much living a lie, and took her life into her hands. You know, when she transitioned, that was not an easy surgery. And her life was actually put at risk, but she was determined to live an authentic life, and that's actually what we all need to be doing. Mia says that the liberation of the LGBT community is the liberation of all people, and that's really true. So, you know, as long as we live a lie, whether it's a lie about our intentions, or our sexuality, or our gender, it's important for us all to have the opportunity to live our authentic lives.
Yes, totally. So, real quick, I really want to thank you for taking the time to sit here with us. Where can people find you on Facebook, your website, and if they want to reach out to you any other way? I'm not sure if there's like a contact there for them to get a hold of you.
Well, there is a place they can make a donation, and I recommend that highly.
Yeah, well, I think that's on those websites. So go ahead, tell us where they can contact you and get involved.
Sure. Our website is thelavendereffect.org. That's like the butterfly effect, only using the word lavender instead of butterfly. And you can go to our website and sign up for our contact list. We have an email list, but it's more than an email list. It actually gives information about how you can get involved, how you can be a part of this oral history project if that interests you. As you said, you can donate on our website. We have people that donate on an annual basis or even a monthly basis, and any donation is helpful to us at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Facebook page. It's The Lavender Effect on Facebook, spelled out. You can like us. We have a Twitter feed, but I think Facebook and the website are the two, and the email list, three different places to get access to what we're up to.
Excellent, excellent. Well, again, Andy, I want to thank you for all the work that you're doing for everyone out there, and also for just, you know, educating our listeners on what you're doing and how the Lavender Effect is affecting everyone out there. I think you're doing an excellent job.
I also want to say, keep watching the St. Tone Facebook page and our personal Facebook pages, because we are going to put together a fundraiser, and we'll be marketing it on all the Facebook, so you guys can make sure you attend if you're in the area and support Andy live and in color. And keep an eye on what this guy's doing, people, because he's making massive changes in the world. One step at a time, and all of us can help him make those changes. So stay tuned to The Lavender Effect. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a great pleasure.
Bye-bye now. So we want to dedicate a song for the purpose of this fabulous interview we just had. The song we're going to dedicate is called Empower Me, and it was written by Tony St. Tone. And the meaning behind this song in relation to our interview is he took the power within himself to create something so strong and take a step to preserve a piece of history. And for that, we commend Andy Socker, and this is Empower Me.
Something's changed within this life, like a light's been turned on late at night. Since my thoughts changed,
Veil's been lifted from these eyes like a self-imposed suicide of old beliefs. So I changed my thoughts and I changed my ways and I changed the way I approach the day, and I'm taking control. Night will come and I will pray, and I think of things and love to change, and I just let go. Empower me, now I see it's always up to me. It's up to me. It's always up to me. Well, I believe. I believe. And if I fall a long way, I know there's things that I change, make things right. And if I feel like I could fly, well, I'd spread these wings of faith and try, and I'd just take flight. Empower me, now I see it's up to me. It's up to me. Empower me, now I see. So it's up to me. Yeah, me. It's every strong belief creates our lives. Voices are the choices. Inside.
Empower Me, sung by and written by Tony St. Tone, and you can find that on www.sainttone.com, and that's SAINTTONE.com. Also, check him out on his Facebook. There's a song a week going on there. Actually, it's a song a day going on there, and you can empower yourself for the entire week. Hey, do something really great for some complete stranger and make their day. Check us out on humanitarianradio.com. Let us know if there's somebody that is doing something great that we should feature on our show. Make it a great week, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Humanitarian Radio, shouting out some good news for your soul.